Hey, welcome back to the Center's Kingdom Culture Podcast. We're excited this week. I'm your host, Dr. Merle Skinner, and with as a ministry of the Christian Family and Children's Center, we have been doing topics that relate to everything from faith and family and culture. Today, I'm really, really excited to have our board president, Roy Locks, with us today. And we're going to be talking about something that's really interesting, and sometimes people struggle with thinking about these kind of things. We're talking about legacy giving today. So, Roy, it's good to have you today.
Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Hey, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do, and for everybody who doesn't know you like I do.
Well, I've been around the center for 30 years, about that, at this point in time. Met you, the firm that I work with back in the early 90s, did a lot of health insurance marketing, and we did a mailer, and you responded and said, hey, give me some information, and that's how we met. Developed a relationship. I worked with you on the advisory board for a while. And I've been on the on our general board for a good number of years. And I don't have a kid here. I've never had a child here. I live 45, 50 minutes away in Elizabeth Township. And, I mean, obviously, geographically, there wasn't a connection. But we both like to golf. We both love the Lord. And we were both looking for ways maybe to make this center a little stronger, a little better. And hopefully I've been able to accomplish some of that.
Roy's been, for our guests out there, Roy has been amazing and has a wealth of knowledge. Is very, very gifted in multiple levels, particularly in the areas of finance and planning. And so we've been talking about some things, and I know Roy, we're both getting a little long in the tooth, as everybody says. You know, we've been around the block for a while, but there's a lot of people in our boat that have lived the life, have been a part of ministries, part of churches, and they're realizing, as they've given over the years, that they're not going to be able to give forever. They're not going to live forever. And so this topic of legacy giving is really important. But so we're going to get to that in a minute. But Roy, talk about some of the other things that you do. I know you have a radio show, and you're still working part time and very involved in church and those kinds of things, right?
So yeah, I'm 71 now, and again started a company 33 years ago, which is now in my son's name, a financial service company. We focus on retirement, working with retirees, building income plans, and walking through their retirement years with them. So part of what we're talking about today is part of what I talk with my clients on a daily basis. Been affiliated with Evangelical Free Church in McKeesport for about 25, 30 years also. The youth pastor, Steve Storkel, knocked on our door one day and said, hey, if you're ever looking for a church that has a good youth program, that's us. And the church we had been attending had just folded. I mean, the pastor couldn't give. So God knew whose door to send Steve to knock on. So our kids got in the youth program there and served on the board there as chairman and vice chair, and working with the trustee board for about half of the time I've been there. Served there now as the chair of our trustee board, which takes care of all the physical properties, staffing, and all of that, the day-to-day stuff there. So I've been active on this board also, and seen some amazing things that God has done from that little campus down south to us, where we're sitting with the completion of the gym just to my left, your right at this point in time. It is crazy amazing to see what God has done.
He's been really faithful, hasn't he, Roy? It's been
without
exciting,
question.
Too.
Without question.
So Roy, let's talk about, I'll give you my non-financial kind of a practical sense of legacy giving, and maybe you can kind of take it from there. But what really strikes me about this is when we talk about legacy, obviously sometimes people say, hey, I want to leave my mark. I want to do those things. But from a Christian standpoint, the idea that we've been supporting ministries financially and that ministries struggle, we know that. You've been on boards, and oftentimes people think, well, what can I do to make a difference long term, and how can God use the resources that I have? And so as people struggle with that, they oftentimes, I find there's a lot of barriers to that. But what is legacy giving as we think about it, Roy? When you think about that and talk with plain people, how do you approach that with people?
Well, obviously, there are the corporate side. I mean, what we've been blessed with what R.K. Melwin's done with us over the years through Barb's work, working with the foundations and trying to secure those charitable donations there is one aspect of legacy giving. Mm-hmm. Not too many of our people out there listening are going to be an R.K. Melwin with those kind of wherewithal finances. But, you know, it's amazing it's amazing when someone sits down and, you know, they've worked a whole lifetime. In today's environment, that probably involves a 401 or a 403 is for their retirement savings. And when they get to retire and we sit down and we're building their budget and putting together the income plan that will be there, that many times it's the first time they realize, I have a partner. I have a partner in Harrisburg and Washington. And when I start taking this money out of there, I have to share some of that money with my partner. Yeah. And when that happens, then they say, well, is there something we might be able to do about that? How can I take 25, 30% of my assets that would have gone to DC and preserve them? Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when we do that, it opens up the door to do some charitable giving. Mm-hmm. So now I have, and I'm just going to make up numbers through the show. I mean, sure. You may have way more than this, you may have way less, but I'm just going to make up numbers to make my conversation simpler. You may have $500,000 401 or an IRA, and when you realize that if you start taking the distributions, they're called required minimum distributions. If you remember that 70.5 number, that was a few years ago, and then it went to 72, and now it's 73. And if you were born in 1960 or later, it'll be 75 for you. But at some point in time, the government says whether you need them or not, whether you want to or not, you're going to have to start taking those distributions. And when that happens, we really become aware of what the tax man is saying. Mm-hmm. So now starts at about 4%. And if I had $500,000 IRA, I'd have to take $20,000 a year out of there. Mm-hmm. And if I'm in a 12% bracket, you know, which is where many people are today, up to about $120,000 of taxable income for a couple keeps you in that bracket when you take standard deductions. That may change after 2025 when the Trump provisions go away, but that's where we are right now. So on that $20,000 distribution, you're going to owe $3,000 worth of taxes. Mm-hmm. And you're going to owe that next year and the year after and the mm-hmm. year after until God brings you home. So when we run the math, and again, I can show you the details, but if we run the math on the money that we'll take, if we're just taking required minimum distributions from 73 to 93, and if I take that money and if I reinvest it, then it creates taxes. And when the money goes to my kids, that creates taxes. There's a little over $400,000 worth of taxes that a $500,000 IRA is going to generate because over that 20 years, it's growing. And now that $500,000 is $1.2 million, $1.3 million. Mm-hmm. So the government's taking about a third of that. So legacy giving gets in and say, what can I do? What could I possibly do? Saying inside the law, that's being, you know, not stretching any of the law and reduce those taxes. And when we do that, oftentimes we create a leveraged product. It's nothing more than a life insurance sale is all it is. Mm-hmm. So that life insurance creates more dollars than what the taxes were. And some of those dollars now can have a charitable vent. So if I'm not taking anything from my kids, and that's predominantly where the funds are going to go, and I do have some extra money, maybe I can continue giving to my church champion or whoever with money that I was giving while I was alive anyhow. It was where my heart was, my tithe was, my giving was. But now I can continue that. And I always like to say, you know, when God brings us home, there's three entities that are going to share in our funds, you know, one of them being, you know, our kids, you know, that would be the predominant one. And then the IRS is in there. And if we want, it can be a charity. And mm-hmm. if I ask people, let's take by show of hands a vote as to which one we want to eliminate. Yeah. I'm sorry, Washington, the IRS loses every time.
Most people say to me, they say, and the legislators say, hey, look, Merle can spend this money much more effectively than
I've seen that. So. I've seen that over these last 25 years, how we've, you know, it again, you look at what happened, you know, when God was feeding people and seven fish and a couple of loaves of bread fed 5,000 people. It's kind of like that here. I mean, yeah. 50 acres of ground for this campus. Where did that come from? Yeah. This building, the completion of the gym. If you've never seen the gym that just went up, there was about $1.5 million of dollars that had to be spent on a property that now is valued at over $2 million mm-hmm. with less than $200,000 of total debt not taken care of. That's loaves and fishes kind of stuff.
That
really
is. It is right. And that's the story that's happening in the kingdom all over the place. And so for all of you that are there, hey, maybe I'm too young to think about this, or maybe I'm, I can never take money away from my family. We're going to get to the barriers. But let me just say, guys, that this is a concept that is really a stewardship concept, at least from my perspective. And I have a bunch of questions about this, Roy, we'll talk about later. But I think often it's really interesting when people think about retirements and legacy and those kind of things. It's funny, all the principles of stewardship that they live during their life, like tithing and other kinds of things and giving, sometimes they don't even consider in the end. And I would say both for churches out there, I mean, I look at churches that are blessed by people that can think this way. There's all kind of ministry and things that can happen. So before we go on, I just want to be clear. We're not looking to hook you into giving money to the center. This is really about a concept. And for our guests around the country, all of you have places like that. So, Roy, what do you find, what keeps people from thinking about this? What do you think is the biggest barrier? Look, I've taken care of myself. I finally realized, and that's a concept themselves, is that, hey, I actually have enough money to retire and all the things I've been saving for, and I have some money that looks like I'm going to be able to let my kids have or do whatever. What is the biggest thing that keeps people from thinking this way?
Well, to go along with what you just said, that is the number one fear for seniors in our country today, running out of money before God brings them home. Yeah. None of us have an expiration date stamped on our left heel. So the planning gets, do I live to 72? Do I live to 102? And all those variables are there. That's what a good retirement firm does. You find somebody out there you're going to work with on a retirement side, you build that income plan. It should be written, it should be reviewed periodically, and it should be kept current. But once you've done that, then it gives you the peace of mind. You know, when we create a budget here for the center, mm-hmm. it does tell us our limitations, but it also tells us our opportunities.
Right.
Where do we have discretionary dollars? Where can we hire another staff? Where can we increase programming?
Right.
A budget does all those things. Mm-hmm. Now, my wife will look at a budget and she'll just say, this is nuts. I don't want any part of it. But if you look at a budget as a liberating tool, mm-hmm. then it becomes a altogether different set of circumstance. And for many of us, you know, that creation of an income plan and knowing that the hard work that I did for 30, 40 years, wherever that was, now gives me the financial ability to walk through retirement. Now, there's another element there. For 20, 30, 40 years, you've been going to work every day. You've been building that account for one purpose, to get it big enough to get you through retirement. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different world when there's no longer a paycheck coming in, and you're now saying, I give myself the authority to spend some of this money, because that's contrary to what we've been doing for 40 years.
Absolutely.
But if there's discretionary dollars in there, and if it's structured right with tax efficiencies, you can take what would have been a negative and make it a very positive situation. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, whether it's Champion, whether it's ASPCA, whatever charity's on your heart, in my opinion, with good planning, if you can do the same income to yourself, the same benefit to your family, and create dollars that would have gone to Washington, I have no confidence in our government spending money wisely. When you look at the society and where they spend money today, I know the churches, the Champions, the ASPCA do a better job than those entities. So when you have the choice, and it could be just something as simple as, you know, making sure that the money that's coming from those required minimum distributions are going to the charity, and the other sources of resources I have are coming to me with less tax implications. That can create $1,000 a month, $500 a month that would have been going in taxes. Why wouldn't you want that to go to something that's in your heart?
I agree, Roy. And, you know, it's really interesting because this has happened to us over the years, and it's been sometimes on a little scale, like, hey, somebody left a little bit of discretionary money and we bought a play set for it. You know, those kinds of things. And sometimes it's been something big. So it was a part of legacy giving to start the gym project, which is huge for us. And I remember going to lunch one day. Didn't have any idea why I was going to lunch, but one of our donors who had been really consistent came with the exact same. I talked with my financial guy. I've got to start taking some money, and I don't need it. My kids don't need it. And hey, would a check of blank, blank, blank get this gym project started you guys have been talking about for years? And so, again, I want to say this isn't for us, but ministries and what God can accomplish with good stewardship is amazing. So I want to encourage us all to kind of do that. The other thing I would say too, and again, I'm a little younger than you, but I'm 66 and working. What's really cool is we were in ministry, and without sharing too much information, Barb and I have never made a lot of money. I mean, but we've worked really hard to prepare for retirement. So I can remember us having these conversations. Should we do this with this, or should we put it in a 401, you know, or in a retirement plan? And I remember that change of pattern at whatever point in our lives in the more recent years of saying, you know what, it looks like God's taking care of us. We are going to be able to retire, and we're not going to starve, you know? And the freeing moment of that, to start thinking about we can now give in a different way, you know, beyond tithing and offering, to where we can actually say we can give to someone or something and be free, like you talked about. Like we have enough to take care of ourselves. Our kids are going to be okay. That is an amazing point. And I would challenge all of us out there that if you're at a point where you've never thought about that, but you might be there, you should really figure that out, because it is freeing, isn't it, Roy? It's freeing, you know?
It actually is. And up until full retirement age, retirement requirement of distribution happens, you have the option of taking money out of the 401 or the 403. And maybe you need that income, so that's maybe the option goes away if the budget says you have to have it. Mm-hmm. But many people get to that age and haven't started distributions, which makes a statement that financially they don't need those dollars for that particular issue. Just because they don't need them now doesn't mean they won't need them 10 years, 15 years from now. So a lot of times what we'll do is structure a limited number of years in a giving plan, funding a life insurance product for 10 years. So someone puts $10,000, $25,000 a year into a life policy for 10 years, at which time that policy is completely paid up, as long as God brings them home by 120. And that's probably going to happen to most people. Those benefits will pay, but no more premium has to happen. So when that occurs, people leave the office and say, we have just created an additional $200,000, $300,000 for our family. Maybe $100,000 of that could go to XYZ charity who's on our heart. But you're probably already giving to your church. You're probably already giving to charitable causes. Mm-hmm. Those funds will stop most likely when God brings you home. But you can do something to make it more of a perpetual circumstance just with a little bit of good planning.
Yeah. And honestly, so let's talk a little bit about barriers to this. And we'll just be real candid. And everybody's different. So again, if you haven't clicked us off by now, at least maybe Roy, they're kind of interested in this idea. So I would say, first of all, I think one of the things that, and Roy, whether you agree, because you do this obviously professionally, but one of the things I think some people don't think about stewardship beyond their life or stewardship of their end years. They tend to think, you know, they don't tend to think about, what do I do when I'm retired in terms of giving beyond making a contribution here and there? Is there a reason you think, Roy, that people, is it the retirement concept that, hey, I'm going to just be done with working and be done with everything? What keeps people, the people that you know that keep giving long-term and think about stewardship of their legacy money, all those kind of things, do you have any ideas what spurs people to think about that?
Well, I think one of the issues that allows them to do that is they have done the planning, looked and see what their income needs are going to be. And when someone builds an income plan, it's not just to pay the mortgage. Hopefully there isn't a mortgage at retirement time, but obviously taxes, utilities, insurance, they're not going to go away. And what we call joy expenses. So, okay, now I have 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week I was putting into a work environment. I have that now. Maybe I can enjoy fishing or traveling or whatever. Whatever you do with those hours is unique to you and important to you, but it needs to be given consideration. I mean, you're going to have, as I said, 40, 50 hours a week. What do you do with that time? It could be sitting on the back porch reading a book and watching the birds in the bird feeder. Perfectly fine if that's what you want to do. But if you're getting close to retirement, not only should you be talking and thinking about how I might be able to set up giving programs, stop and think about what you'll do with your own time. And the reason I think that a lot of people are a little hesitant to it, it's kind of like pre-planning your funeral. You know, am I allowing myself to address my own mortality? If I do this, is God going to knock on my door tonight? You know, probably not, right. But it could be. If you've done the first step and made sure that income is going to be okay, and this needs to be a process, if you're married, with both people sitting there, because I can't tell you how many times people come in the office and mom will be, I'm an investment girl. I want this money in the market. I want it working really crazy hard. And dad will be over there saying, no, I don't want a 2008 to take anything away from us in retirement. Yeah. And blending them together.
Yeah.
And then having them be able to understand that I can do more than just take care of myself. I can do more than just give while I'm alive. And we use the term giving with warm hands as opposed to giving with cold hands.
Yes.
You know, legacy planning may be more of a cold hand giving. It may be typically when you pass.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely nothing wrong with giving with warm hands.
Yes.
Ed Slott said that, the IRA guru in the country, that, you know, it's better to give with warm hands than cold hands. And that resonates so true.
Yes.
I always use the story that, you know, when you can take your kids to Disney and have a great time and be in the pictures, or you can die and they're going to go to Disney, but you're just not going to be in the pictures. So be in the picture with your family, be in the picture with the causes that are in your heart, the charities. Good planning makes a difference, and the difference doesn't have to come out of your pocket, but it will probably come out of the IRS's pocket.
Very, very cool idea. So one of the, I think I'm with you too, like this, that we tend to think about death is an end rather than a beginning. And so if we start to think biblically about our life, that the time that we pass from this earth and into eternity is a continuum. It's not a stopping and a starting. It's a continuum. It's just the next stage of our life. It's easier, a little easier to think about what we want to see happen during that time. So it does. You're right, Deborah. That takes some you got to overcome some fear. You've got to overcome some difficult conversations. I've also heard you talk about this and other people too, that, well, everything that's left over has to go to the kids. And let's talk about that a little bit, because I know personally I've seen that be actually, again, we don't want to let our kids not having benefits. We're not suggesting that. But sometimes having too much is not a good thing either. So talk about that a little bit from your perspective.
So someone comes into our office, becomes a client, and they're a single person. It's a different story what they're doing with legacy. I mean, they'll probably be looking more to charitable causes because they may have brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, but it's not the same as you suggest passing it down to a child. So, and you'll appreciate this, Mara. We have some folks that come in and said, look, I brought those children into the world. I raised them. I fed them. I clothed them. I got them an education. And we're going to spend what we have on us. And the day we die, the last check is going to go to the undertaker and it's going to bounce. There's not going to be anything left for anybody. And then, but on the other hand, most people come in and say, look, I'm going to use what I need from these accounts. But as much as I can preserve of it, I would like to go to the kids. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. I mean, that is that legacy truly in its purest form. So when you educate someone that you're not saying don't give to your children or give less to your children, what you're saying is a concept. There was a judge by the name of Learned Hand, and I think Learned Hand is the best name for a judge I've ever heard in my life. But he made a comment one time that it's our requirement to legally give every penny of taxes that we are required to. Mm-hmm. But anything that is not legally required is our choice. Mm-hmm. So if there are strategies that you can put in place that would reduce that taxation, therefore either increasing to your children or opening up the door to do some charitable giving with funds that would have not gone to your kids but would have gone to the IRS, that's a win. And that's the kind of legacy planning that we want people to be doing.
Excellent. So use a statistic. What's the average length of money?
You don't want to know.
Oh, come on. Tell us.
It's 180 days.
So the average
takes us a lifetime to build it. Our kids can spend it in 6 months on average.
So which most of us would agree probably isn't healthy. Now it's one thing if they're spending it on, we were finally able to buy a home or finally able to do some things like that. But if it's
shiny new cars and things like that happen on a regular basis, Merle.
So as we think about those things, there's stewardship in giving and receiving as well too. So lots of interesting concepts there. Roy, how about other barriers? Are there other barriers that keep people from thinking this that you run into?
Well, sometimes they don't think, they just don't know the legalities of what they can do. I think they don't know the techniques that have to be applied to do that. And again, you're going to seek counsel for that. Mm-hmm. And again, I think there are so many great financial professionals in Western Pennsylvania where we live. Mm-hmm. And most of them focus on understanding the market, building the growth in the market, and not necessarily some of those ancillary aspects, legacy mm-hmm. planning, things of that nature. Seek out for yourself someone who focuses on retirement, because they're going to integrate into your income plan a legacy plan. They're going to integrate in there a tax plan. They're going to integrate into their long-term care plan. And all of those pieces are a retirement budget. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying if you're 52, you can't do legacy planning, but I am saying it really lends itself to folks as they come into that retirement cycle mm-hmm. because they are now structuring their income and assets with a different purpose, you know, to provide the income they need and for the efficiencies they want. And legacy planning, again, is one of those efficiencies.
And the status of the market, I'm assuming, timing, right? And making some decisions, like maybe at the high points when you're trying to maximize some market. I'm assuming there's a timing piece to this that makes it easier.
There's a statistic we use in the classes we teach at the colleges, and it's something along the lines that if you miss the best 40 days in the market over the last 10 years, the last 10 years we've experienced, your return is actually less than 10% would it be if you just stayed in the market. Mm-hmm. So market timing is impossible. But where we are in the market right now, this point in time in 2024, market's been pretty good recently. So The adage, the wisdom is you want to harvest those market gains when they're there. Take money out when it's high and buy when it's low. Mm-hmm. So if you did need to withdraw some money to fund the legacy plan, might not be a bad time to look at it in this environment we're in right now.
Okay, good. And we're going to, and at the center, this is, I want to be clear, this is focused to, for our friends around the country. We're not looking to build Roy's retired. He's not looking to build business. And we, obviously, if God leads you to give to the center, that's great. But we'd like to see this happen for so that churches and ministries around the world are blessed. So, but we are going to, part two of this, we'll be actually talking a little bit about some steps the center is taking. And if you're interested, we want you to kind of look into that. And again, people will sometimes get really funny when you talk about money and Christianity. And it's really interesting to me because how much scripture talks about finances is...
I remember 30 years ago sitting in a pew and hearing that the last two things to be saved in a Christian man are his right foot and his wallet.
great point, Roy, because we don't tend to think biblically about money, do we? I hear oftentimes Christian businessmen who don't think about integrating Christian in business. You know, it's kind of like, I'm a business guy and then I'm a Christian. It's like, wait a second, those two are not opposite. Those actually go together. Same way with our personal life as well.
Absolutely. One of the things, my son is now the owner of the agency back in McKeesport, White Oak Synergy, where we started the company. So one of the things that I ingrained in Jason with the 20 plus years before that agency went over to him was how important it was to be involved in the community. So there are 8 or 10 charities that were on my heart, you know, that we would give to regularly. And a lot of that continues with my son. He may have added a few of his own,
yeah,
but it's really amazing to see what a charitable-minded business can do to benefit the community while it's active in that area.
Yeah, and let me say, as an executive director of an organization, I would absolutely say that too. There are businessmen and businesses that have made a difference in the life of the ministry here that will have far-reaching implications, and so we're real excited about that. So as you're thinking, whether you're 20, yeah, maybe not planning for this right now, but again, we want to put this on your radar developmentally. Think about stewardship throughout your life cycle, not just up until retirement. And then we're going to sit around and eat bonbons and go on trips, because that is the other concept too, Roy, that I guess we haven't talked about.
I do like bonbons.
Yes, I don't like bonbons, but I do like traveling. So, but the reality is, maybe when you're 120, you're not going to be wanting to travel around the world a lot, right? So you want to keep thinking about all of this in the context of your entire life, right?
It is. I mean, we counsel people when they retire in those first years, the first 5, 10, 12 years of retirement, when you're going to be more vital, more active, you know, you'll do those things. And then in latter years, maybe that slows down a little bit. So we kind of overfund the early years of retirement for that very, very reason. But the government, right there, when you turn in today's environment 73, now says you have $500,000, $200,000, $2 million in your 401. You're now required to take that money out. Again, if you need that in your budget, you probably already started taking it out. But if you don't, what do you do with those funds? You can spend them. Haven't been, but you could. You could take those distributions, reinvest them, which would create more taxes on the road, or they can pass to your children somewhere down the road as well. You could give as well. I mean, obviously there. So if you're not going to do that, if you're not going to spend it, if you're not going to reinvest it, and gifting is not in your heart right now, if you plan it, you can reduce those taxes significantly. So if it's important to you that your money goes where you want it to, and where you want it to go is not to the IRS, then you have to do some planning. I love our country. I mean, I don't like paying as much taxes as any of us do. Nobody does. We're in a very low tax environment now. Never feels that way, but it is true. But I would still much rather every nickel, every dime would go to Heather and Jay as opposed to the IRS. And I'm sure if you're out there listening, whoever your Heather and Jays are, well, you say the same thing.
Absolutely. So we're going to close on that note. And again, once we appreciate you listening to this version or today's this week's version of the Center's Kingdom Christian podcast, and look for more coming. And we'll have Roy on for part two, which will be a little bit more focused on our ministry down the road here. Roy will be, if you're in our area, Roy will be, we're rescheduling him to come in and do a 55 plus on-site thing for people to talk about legacy giving. So Roy, thanks for being here. Would you mind closing us in prayer?
I'd be glad to. Father, as I sit here this morning, look out the window at the bright sunshine and just a little cooler temperatures than we've experienced in the last week or two, I realize all of the blessings you've given me, ears to hear, eyes to see, fingers to touch and to feel. And one of the benefits you have given me, Lord, is the ability to connect with other people, with other organizations that love you and want to further your cause. And I know in my heart that Champion is one of those. So thank you, Lord, for the opportunity to talk with Merle. If it touches one person and helps them to understand how valuable they can be in this community and this giving opportunity that you've provided, Lord, then this was a good meeting. So I pray for all of those who are listening, and I thank you, Lord, for the opportunity to do this. In Christ's name.
Thanks again, Roy. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And just a reminder, if you want to know more about the center's ministry, you can find out more at www.champion.org. If you want to hear this and other podcasts, go to our podcast page at champion.org/podcast. You can hear all kinds of things about faith, family, public policy, education, counseling, the kinds of things that we're involved in. So looking forward to connecting with you again next week. Thanks for being here.